Well, thank you, Dr. Enns. So Milt and I were exchanging emails a couple of days ago, and he said, Dr. Enns is going to kill me if I go over my time, so good luck with that later. We'll see how that goes. But today we're going to talk a little bit about the application that we're using in the American Ink Association with PAP and the research that we've collaborated with Colorado State University and Dr. Tim Holt, and really kind of where we're at from a standpoint of trying to select cattle genetically for this type of resistance to high altitude disease. And I put this up here just as a note. So the USDA just launched for the next 10 years their plan for the use of genomics in animal livestock populations. And if you read that title, it says improving animal health production and well-being, where health and well-being really weren't included in that in the last report. And I think one thing that we have to think about is not only is this a huge health issue, a huge economic issue for our individual producers and people in the beef industry, everyone in here, but if we think about it from a well-being issue and what groups could do with the idea if they heard that cattle's hearts, you know, and the way they would put that, cattle's hearts are exploding, you know, as we're shoving them through the feedlot or we're making them graze at high elevations, that's a pretty scary narrative that we really have to get our hands around. And so excited to work on this project with Colorado State University. And let's give you an update kind of where we're at. So we began basically collecting or intaking PAP scores since 2013 at the American Ink Association. Obviously, people have been PAPing for a much longer time than that. But that was really when this started to become a lot of conversation with our high-altitude breeders as to whether or not we could create a genetic tool for them to be able to select parental animals for their personal operations. So we started on this collaboration with Colorado State University in 2016, and we basically wanted to answer three main questions. Okay, that first one being, is there a relationship and a value of taking PAP measurements at lower elevations, lower than 6,000 to 5,500 feet? Okay, these people that are on these moderate elevation plains, is there value in taking those measurements and using them for genetic selection? The second question, obviously a question that Milt talked about a lot, was this idea, does PAP have a relationship with growth traits? Okay, is it just because we're making these cattle too big? And how does that really result in Angus cattle? And then finally, we looked at some of the ultrasound and carcass traits in Angus cattle as well. So through this collaboration, we basically combined three different data sets. So each one of us had roughly 5,000 records. So we had 5,000 records came out of the AAA database, 5,000 records from the Rouse Ranch, and then 5,000 records from Angus producers that Tim Holt had collected over the years but may have not have sent them into the association. Okay, so that was our data set we were looking at. We found a way to basically quantify this high elevation versus moderate elevation break. Okay, so since I've been working with this type of high altitude disease, and I always get a little nervous when I have to give talks about it because I'm a corn-fed, Wisconsin-grown individual, okay, so I didn't have to deal with this disease growing up. But basically, this high elevation versus moderate elevation, what is a quantifiable way we can make this break? Because you talk to somebody in different parts of high altitude environments, and they'll say 5,500, some will say 6,500, some will say, hey, we don't have this until 7,500 feet, okay? That's high altitude to us. So we really want to figure out, you know, what is the baseline assumption? Where can we put that break and really start to use that data into two different categories? And then is there a high correlation or a moderately high correlation between these high and moderate elevations that would then allow us to use them in a correlated trait type of model to predict yearling high altitude PAP? Okay, so that was our goals. And this is what Rachel Pauling really summarized for us through that research project. So the first thing that we take away from this, and we had roughly just under 15,000 records in the study, is when we really start to talk about where is our logical break for moderate and high elevation PAP. Okay, so what she did is she analyzed all of her PAP data together in one analysis, and she came up with 147 distinct elevation locations. And then when she fit this quadratic, what she was looking for is basically the lowest point on this red line. And when she did that, she basically found that the lowest point was right around 1,620 meters. Okay, so roughly 5,250 feet. Okay, that is where, with this quantifiable analysis that she did with these PAP records, these 15,000 data points, 147 different elevations, she found that once we hit basically 1,620 meters in elevation, PAP started to increase due to the fact we were rising our location. Okay? Wasn't 7,500 feet, it wasn't 6,500 feet, it was about 5,250. Another important takeaway that we basically had from this analysis was when we looked at the correlation among those two, high and moderate elevation. Okay, so in this case, remember, high elevation is going to be anything above 5,250. Moderate elevation is 4,000 feet to 5,250. Okay, that's what we're looking at. Heritabilities, obviously very similar to what we've seen in the past, roughly a 0.3 heritability for high elevation PAP and a 0.29 heritability for basically moderate elevation PAP. But I think the most important takeaway on this slide is that number, right, in the red. The idea that the correlation between these two PAP measurements taking at these different elevations is 0.83. That is a very large positive correlation that basically allows us to start to think about how do we fit these two different traits in a two-trait model that would allow us to basically capture the variation that we're collecting at these moderate elevations, okay, and use them to help us predict high elevation PAP. Okay, much like we use something like ultrasound records, okay, to predict carcass weight EPDs or carcass EPDs in general. That's roughly a 0.6 correlation. We actually have a higher correlation between moderate and high elevation PAP than we do using ultrasound carcass data and actual carcass data. Okay, and Dean, I think you would agree we've made a lot of progress using ultrasound data in our carcass EPDs. The next takeaway that we had from Rachel's paper was basically there was no strong correlations between those growth traits that we looked at in this particular study. So here we just have the growth traits, but if you look up here on the top line, basically very similar to what Milt had talked about earlier, there's really no strong relationship other than maybe birth weight maternal that would indicate that we should fit some of our other growth traits in our two-trait model for PAP. Okay, no strong correlation that would say, you know, we're causing these PAP issues because we're continuing to increase direct weaning weight or direct yearling weight, right? Not a strong correlation there. So with all that information in hand, basically what we did is we released a research report on PAP in February of 2019. Okay, our research report, the idea behind this is we get a research EPD out there to our producers, so they can give us feedback and allow us to understand, is it useful? Should we continue on this road? Is there something that we're missing? And allow them to evaluate the rankings among those sires, allow them to evaluate the usefulness of this type of EPD in their individual operations. So when we look at modeling this new trait, basically the first thing that we have to remember is that we are evaluating high altitude yearling PAP. Okay? That is the trait that we're trying to identify through this research. So high elevation being 5,500 feet or higher. Okay, that is what we're focused on when we run this model. We're fitting age as a covariate, and because we're focused on that yearling PAP, we've actually extended, right, what our yearling window would be. So those of you that are in the Angus breed, yearling weights are collected between 320 and 440 days of age. We actually extended that out to 720 days of age because we know that Dr. Holt and, you know, the five other people that take PAP measurements can't get to every single person between that window. Okay, so we want to make sure that we can use as much data as we possibly can, and knowing that the older the animals are, generally the better the PAP measurement is as far as the communication that we have with Dr. Holt. We then fit elevation as a covariate, and it is a continuous covariate. So that's fit into the model as well. When we talk about things like contemporary group follows a similar makeup of what we would use for yearling contemporary group, being herd, sex, test date, and elevation. Okay, and that's fit in there as a fixed effect like many of our different models. We have a moderate elevation PAP score that's fit in as a correlated trait based on that research that we had from Rachel Pauling. And then basically we do run a single-step genomic evaluation. So this idea of GEPDs, we do have genomically enhanced expected progeny differences basically for this PAP research EPD. And it's not due to the fact that we're finding specific genes that we're fitting in there. It's not a weighted single set model, but basically we're enhancing that genomic relationship matrix. Okay, so that's how we handle that. When we talk about our elevation breaks at the American Angus Association, basically high altitude, like we just talked about, 5,500 feet or greater. For our moderate altitude measurements, 4,000 to less than 5,500 feet. Okay, we don't actually have any data that is less than 4,000 feet in our database, okay, that we have available for us to work with when we analyze just the Angus data that had been sent into us by our members. So when we talk about our, basically our research EPD, the number of records that we use were roughly 4,200 high elevation PAP records, 1,500 moderate elevation records. You look at the spread in the actual scores, anywhere from roughly 28 to 180 on our high elevation, 25 to 139 on our moderate elevation. And then basically what we did, because we had a limited data set, we truncated that data, okay, to basically range from 30 to 80 for PAP score. And the reason for that is if you remember those graphs Milt was showing you, right, with that long tail at the end, with a limited data set, what can happen is we might have, let's say, a bull with 5 progeny, okay? He's a bull, he has 5 progeny measurements for PAP. 3 of them score 30, okay, really good. 2 of them score 180. That skews his variation a whole bunch, and that can really skew him when we talk about basically putting that into a blunt model and then predicting that EPD. Okay, so he might get really hurt for the fact that he has one or two animals that score really poorly on that particular PAP score, when in fact he really might not be that bad. So we edited that data down so we could basically capture that correct variation. Anything less than a 30 PAP score, we basically threw out of the evaluation. Okay, the reason we did that is because when we talked to several of our PAP scorers, we talked to Dr. Holt, really they explained to me that basically when we have lower than a 30 PAP score, a lot of times it's a misreading. Okay, so we want to make sure that this data set is as clean as possible. When we talk about our heritability estimates that we basically had for high and moderate elevation PAP in the Angus database, with this little bit more limited data set, a 0.3 for high elevation, a 0.16 for a moderate elevation. Okay, so a little less heritability in that moderate elevation group than what Rachel had reported in her thesis here in the paper we just looked at. And then basically, again, a very strong positive correlation of 0.8 between high and moderate elevation PAP. So this past winter, I guess, we basically released this PAP research EPD and allowed people to really kind of bite that off, chew it up, and really figure out, was that useful for them? So progress with the research EPD since. So anytime, just like I explained in the foot score talk I gave not too long ago, anytime we give a blank box to producers to shoot for, what happens is they start pulling out all their old records. Okay? So since February, basically we've added over 2,600 high elevation records and almost 1,000 moderate elevation records to our data set. And basically, if we look at what the mean EPD, the standard deviation, and the min and max are for current sires, and so in our database, current sires are anything that have registered progeny in the past 2 years, okay? The mean EPD is negative 0.29, standard deviation 0.85, and then you can see the min and maxes here that basically we have published currently for our individual sires on that research report. With that research report, basically only sires with a 0.4 accuracy or above were published, thinking that if people were going to use that in some sort of selection criteria, we wanted to put the most accurate information we had available. So future work, basically we want to look at incorporating our weaning PAP measurements. We know that individual producers will take weaning PAP measurements. The way it was explained to me is if they're bad at weaning, we know they're going to be bad, right? And so we'll get rid of them, we'll remove them from the herd. So by fitting that into our multi-trait model that we have currently, we avoid that pre-selection bias. Just like there's a pre-selection bias in yearling weight or in carcass weight when we take cattle and we sell them as feeder calves through the sale barn. Okay, we'll take the smaller cattle, we'll wean them off, and basically we'll sell them before and we won't take them on yearling time. Same idea with our weaning PAP measurements. Not only that, but it will also increase the number of records we have. And
preliminary analysis showed that we did see a fairly high correlation between weaning PAP and then also the high-altitude yearling PAP measurements as well. So currently we have roughly 3,000 records, weaning PAP records that would range from 120 days to basically 280 days of age in the Angus database, with 1,000 of those animals having both weaning and yearling PAP at high altitudes. So some interesting work still to come with this particular research EPD, which hopefully by the end of 2019 will be to a point where we can actually release a production PAP EPD to our membership. So that would go on registration papers, things like that. The one thing I would remind everyone is that we are running a single-step genomic evaluation, so it's just not our high-altitude breeders that will have a PAP EPD. Anyone who genotypes will have a PAP EPD at that time, just like for any of our other traits. So that's kind of the rest of our timeline. But between now and then, I think there's a few key points that we really have to take away, continue to drive home to people as we start talking about PAP EPDs, is that an EPD with this type of characteristic is not a replacement for the actual PAP score. Okay, I don't encourage producers to go find their high PAP EPD bull from Illinois and take them straight up the mountain and turn them out and feel 100% confident that he's going to survive. Okay, take the PAP measurement, take the PAP score, figure out if he can withstand that hypoxic environment, and really, really understand, you know, is that a good place for him to be? However, on the flip side of that, being able to identify that Illinois bull, right, as a prominent sire to be able to be used in high-altitude environments through artificial insemination as a parent, I think that's a really great opportunity. I think Dr. Engs told me one time that one of the best bulls that they've ever had at the Rouse Ranch actually came from the Midwest, okay, as far as producing progeny that could withstand these high-altitude environments. So there is definitely basically progress that can be made, and then basically it just allows our high-altitude breeders to identify bulls with less risk. And just like any other EPD, we're talking about the next generation, but definitely not a replacement for the work that Dr. Holt or anyone else does as far as making sure those animals can survive and graze at those high-altitude environments. So with that, that's about all I had, but I'll take any questions.